Shrink Wrap Radio number 41, July 8th, 2006. Body Mind Healing with Qigong. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
The thesis of my book really is that every Tai Chi movement has four different levels of healing purpose. One is self-defense. One is self-healing, another is spiritual unfoldment, and the fourth is that it really is a way to change your psychological state, your stance in life. And so what I'm trying to do is to bring together those four different levels of healing purpose so that the diaspora that has gone on, I believe, in Tai Chi and in Qigong is changed so that we see that those four levels of meaning are there in all movements.
That was the voice of my friend, Dr. Michael Mayer, who is a licensed psychologist, hypnotherapist, and a Qigong Tai Chi teacher in the San Francisco Bay Area. Michael specializes in giving his patients self-healing methods for physical and mental health problems. He says he may have been the first person in the U.S. to train doctoral-level psychology students in the integration of Qigong and psychotherapy. He's also authored 10 publications on body-mind healing, including books, audio tapes, and journal articles. He also founded one of the first complementary medicine clinics in this country. I recently had a chance to attend a day-long seminar that Michael taught on his integrative body-mind approach. I'm also in the process of reading his most recent book, which is both scholarly and extremely practical. The title is Secrets to Living Longer, The Self-Healing Path of Qigong, Standing Meditation, and Tai Chi. And now, here's the interview. My guest today is energy psychologist Dr. Michael Mayer. Michael, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks, it's great to be here.
Okay, well Michael, you're a licensed psychologist and a Qigong and Tai Chi teacher, and you've integrated these two approaches into a unique synthesis, which you refer to as body-mind healing. So why don't we start with a bit of your history? How did you get into psychology in the first place? And then how did that bring you into Qigong and Tai Chi?
Well, initially I was going to be an attorney because my father was an attorney. And then when I was individuating, I decided to follow another path. And my father was very disappointed.
I'll bet.
And I told my father, well, I'm going to still be an attorney, but I'm going to just be an attorney for the body, mind, and spirit.
Uh-huh.
And then I went on a quest to the West and came out to the same school where you taught for a long time. Then it was called the Humanistic Psychology Institute. And I started doing my doctoral program. And as I was studying psychology and studying all those really interesting relaxation methods for the amount of problems that I had in my body at that point, those relaxation methods didn't do quite enough for me. And then one day I saw somebody practicing, very strange looking, but very relaxing looking thing. And I found out that that was Tai Chi. And I went on a quest through the Bay Area with quite a few teachers and then settled in on the teacher Fang Ha, Sifu Fang Ha, that I've been working with for the last 30 years. And then I studied with quite a few other people in medical Qigong and other things, but that was my start back in the early 70s.
Okay. You know, I've been enjoying your book, and I'll give people a reference to the book offline, and also there will be a link in the show notes. And I recall reading in the book that you were pretty stressed out about having to write your dissertation, and it was about at that point that you discovered Tai Chi.
That's right.
And so this turned out to be... This settled you down enough that you were able to proceed then?
Exactly. It would help me take the blocks that went on in my body and help to move them through and help to not only relax me, but help to there's a whole philosophy behind it, and it did all of that and more for me.
Yeah, great. You know, the term Tai Chi, I think, is much more widely recognized by most people than Qigong. And I was surprised to read in your book that the term Qigong is, in fact, relatively new. Maybe you can give us a brief overview of the history of Tai Chi and of Qigong and their relationship to one another.
Well, there's a lot of scholars that have done a very good job with that, and I have quite a bit about that in the introduction to my book. But before Qigong was a known term, the term was called Dao Yin, and Dao Yin meant leading and guiding the life force of the universe. The term Qigong was first mentioned by a Taoist master, Sun, who died in about 374 AD, but the term wasn't used in its specialized sense as the Qi cultivation that we now know it to mean until about the 20th century. And according to Taoist scholar Catherine Despot, the term Qigong appears in titles of two works in 1915 and 1929, but was talked about in terms of working as therapy for tuberculosis in about 1936. And nowadays, Qigong is used widely to talk about all of the medical uses of Qigong, as well as self-healing exercises and meditation disciplines from ancient times to the present. Tai Chi, Doug Weil and various authors like that talk about the origins of Tai Chi, which also came a little bit late on the stage, but these were all really rooted in terms of my understanding back in shamanic practices.
Mm-hmm.
So in a certain sense, Qigong didn't just begin at the times that I said, and Tai Chi didn't begin just at the times I said, because this idea of working with the energy, the life force of the universe, had to do with shamanic cultures all across the planet. And in the book, I talk about how it was there in the Buddha's training, which was in the BC era,
mm-hmm.
and it was in the Greek mystery tradition. It was there in Hinduism. It was there in the Jewish tradition. It was there in many, many traditions, this idea of working with the life force of the universe.
Fascinating. Some of that was new to me. As I was reading in your book, I didn't realize that it had permeated so many traditions. Now, so from your explanation, I gather that Qigong has actually been around for a long time, although under a different name, and that the term Qigong is relatively new. Now, you refer to Qi, you refer to life energy, but give us just a little definition of Qi, if you would.
Well, that would also get very complex because I have a scientific as well as a mystical side to myself. Qi is normally defined as the life force of the universe. And so there are many debates that happen in, say, some of the top journals like the Journal of Subtle Energies from an organization named ICEM in Gold Coast, Colorado, that goes into really a lot of the extensive dimensions of how much it is electromagnetic, how much it's broader than that, the various different manifestations of Qi. You know, you could look at it in terms of the chakras. Some people look at it that way. Other people look at it in terms of the energies that go through the meridians.
Mm-hmm.
Some people look at it as the direct current that's there in the brain.
When you said meridians, you're referring to acupuncture meridians.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just want that to be clear for listeners.
That's right. So there are many different ways to talk about this life force and talk about the academics of what it really is. But in a sense, it's mysterious life energy. And at the deepest level, we all are composed of this energy. And in the new era of energy medicine, what we now know is that that energy is responsible for healing. Since the work of Robert Becker and other people like that, we know that there's a current of energy. And if that current is disturbed, that we don't heal as well. And that's why there is a shift from the era of biochemical medicine to an energy medicine that includes both.
Wonderful. And I understand that through the practice of Qigong and Tai Chi, one can begin to experience and actually feel this Qi life energy in their body.
That's right. Virtually everybody that does a Tai Chi or Qigong class for a pretty short period of time will have that experience.
Okay. Now, in your book, you use the term body-mind, and you use it extensively throughout the book. Tell us a little bit about the history of that term and what you intend when you use it.
Well, the term first came into the Western literature from Ken Dykewald, whose book Body Mind was written back in 1977. And there are now over 124 books on Amazon.com with the word Body Mind in it. Mm-hmm. My site, BodyMindHealing.com, www, is a portal site for the Body Mind Healing sites on the World Wide Web. And so people can go there and check out and find more about other Body Mind Healing traditions. Many people will talk about mind-body medicine. That's a more commonly used term. Mm-hmm. And because of my intellectual orientation and because of the culture's intellectual orientation and because how much I believe our culture needs to be more embodied, I feel like Ken Dykewald did, that it's important to put the body part first.
Okay. And so really, this is another word that points to what people talk about when they talk about a holistic approach.
That's right.
Yeah. And in your book, you know, I would guess that most of our listeners are familiar with sitting meditation, with Zen meditation, and the process of sitting on a Zen meditation cushion. I notice in your book, though, that you place a lot of emphasis on standing meditation. Perhaps you can describe standing meditation for us and tell us why that's so important.
Well, Ken Cohn, one of the foremost Taoist scholars, describes standing meditation as the million-dollar secret of Qigong. Hmm. And if you ask any Tai Chi or Qigong master, they will tell you that it's the greatest secret of Qigong, which is basically doing nothing and finding contentment in being a light. And so it's really a form of meditation, just like others, where you would do just what you would do while you're sitting. You watch your breath. But in a standing posture, I and many other people find that, well, let's say in sitting, you're crossing your legs. So some of your attention initially is focusing on the blocks that come up in your legs mm-hmm. as they're crossed.
As they start to hurt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the foremost Qigong teachers, Bodhidharma, was looking at sitting meditators back in old Indian China and decided that he wanted to be merciful and find a way to help these very enlightened but sedentary souls to help to heal their bodies and prevent the muscles from atrophying. And so one of the systems was developed by Bodhidharma out of his enlightened compassion to help monks that were sitting. And I like to make the analogy that today we have our sedentary office workers that are sitting and their bodies are also atrophying. So Qigong as a form of standing meditation is a form of meditation that is not only for spirituality, but it also opens you up to a healing energy in specific ways having to do with cultivating the qi while you are standing, doing various different imagery practices, different kinds of slight rockings and circling. And so it's not an either-or thing. I have taught people that do sitting meditation how to do standing, and then they bring that awareness back into their sitting. So in effect, the standing meditation becomes an entryway into a way of qi cultivation that can be done lying down, sitting, or standing.
Okay. And I know that both Tai Chi and Qigong have martial arts applications as well. Not only are they valuable for self-healing and for spiritual development, but people who have practiced them for a long time develop martial arts techniques and powers. And a mutual friend of ours, Sandy Rosenberg, gave me a book, the title of which escapes me, but I think Warrior was in the title. And it spoke quite a bit about standing meditation and told a story, and you probably know who this person is, somebody in China who was able to defeat a large number of contenders, barely moving at all because he had developed his qi so powerfully just by standing.
Yes, the person you're referring to is Jan Diepersloot, who wrote the book called Warriors of Stillness.
That's it.
Who's one of our Tai Chi brothers, and I and Jan studied together with this grandmaster from China in standing meditation. It was one of the students of the person you're referring to, who's called Wang Hanchai. And Wang Hanchai was a sickly child, and his father sent him to study with various different Qigong and martial arts masters throughout China. And the story is exactly the way you say it, that he ended up healing himself and becoming one of the greatest martial arts artists of China. And when people would see how he would defeat these external martial artists so quickly, they would say, "How do you do this?" And he would say, "All I do is stand." And so the thesis of my book really is that every Tai Chi movement has four different levels of healing purpose. One is self-defense. One is self-healing. Another is spiritual unfoldment. And the fourth is that it really is a way to change your psychological state, your stance in life. And so what I'm trying to do is to bring together those four different levels of healing purpose so that the diaspora that has gone on, I believe, in Tai Chi and in Qigong is changed so that we see that those four levels of meaning are there in all movements.
Okay. In your book, you cite a considerable amount of evidence relating to the healing of a wide variety of medical conditions. Now, how can this be? How does that work?
Well, I have two different parts of my approach. One is I call body-mind healing Qigong, and the other I call body-mind healing psychotherapy. So in each of those areas, healings happen, not for everybody, and it's always important to keep a circumspect scientific attitude towards all of those things because some methods work better for some than others. Mm-hmm. But there's a variety of literature that shows, for example, with Qigong, that for preventing falls amongst the elderly, there was a study from the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed that Tai Chi was better than any other of nine exercise systems from the West.
Interesting.
It was better than any of those for preventing falls amongst the elderly.
Okay.
Then I could list many other diseases, such as chronic pain, carpal tunnel syndrome, fibromyalgia, even shingles. There was a study down at the University of California, Los Angeles, by a doctor, psychiatrist named Dr. Irwin, who basically showed that Tai Chi was better than other methods for reducing the pain of shingles. But I really stand not for Tai Chi and Qigong, but for integrative medicine. So in the integrative medical clinic that I helped to co-found and worked at for 3 years, I believe not in saying one method is better than the other, but in a new era of integrative medicine. And there's a wide variety of us in the culture that are really advocating for that to help to reduce the soul power that seemingly Western doctors have, but to not denigrate that either and to bring them into a healing mandala as partners with various other traditions, each of which have their own merit.
Yeah. In your clinic that you just referred to, let's see, there's you, who is trained as a clinical psychologist. I believe you have an MD, a chiropractor, an acupuncturist, a naturopath. Am I right? Am I leaving anybody out?
We had body workers there also. Yes, all of those people that you mentioned.
Okay. And so that makes for a very integrated approach.
Yes.
In your work with clients, you know, and I should mention, I probably will mention in the introduction before this interview that I did take a workshop with you this past weekend, a very wonderful workshop, and you told a couple of case histories in there. So maybe you could relate one of those from your own work with clients, the sort of this integration of psychological and medical and energy work.
Okay, well, let's see. I guess I could tell a story of one woman who had a lower back problem and went to our orthopedic surgeon, and she was about to get lower back surgery. When I started working with her, I had her breathe and go into her back, and a memory of a past sexual assault came up. And after that, she was able to walk and actually run again, and she didn't need to go and get surgery. I'm very careful always when I tell that, even though it was a very, very moving experience, and I could go into many more of the details of it, that she was also working with the chiropractor and the acupuncturist in our clinic. So I can't be positive that the changes that went on in her were just due to the work that I did with her, but the depths of tears that came up when she realized that this place she had been stabbed in the back after this sexual assault, the level of emotion that released at that point and the implications for that in terms of her life and what shifted in her, I think it was certainly instrumental in the change. And I think that those kinds of things are really what's behind many different kinds of things get treated by drugs or by surgery or other things like that. And from the wider perspective of our current healthcare crisis, many dollars could be saved with these kinds of first-line interventions that would help people to look at psychological and energetic imbalances that they have before going into much more expensive surgeries or medication regimens that produce side effects, rebound insomnia, and various things like that.
Yeah. Now, I recall when you described this particular case in the workshop that it involved an integration of visualization and also certain bodily postures that you had her assume. And you mentioned that you don't always label those as qigong per se.
Exactly.
Which I found that very interesting.
One of my desires is to present esoteric things in very down-to-earth ways without even using the language of qigong and tai chi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm training therapists, I've trained psychologists and therapists at various different of the schools in the Bay Area and other places around the country. And some people aren't going to want anything esoteric or Eastern. And so if I just have her lie down and follow her breath, because she had a hard time sitting up even, she just followed her breath down what's called the microcosmic orbit. That's an orbit that's known in Chinese medicine, but you don't need to even use a word like that. You can just say, notice a river coming over the top of your head and down into your body and feel what it hits into. And that's where she felt it hit into this block on her back. And from that, the memory came up of this mm-hmm. past sexual assault where mm-hmm. she was stabbed in her back. So you're right. I don't need to use any words having to do qigong. It's just knowing those energetic pathways can allow things to arise from them, old memories, healing states, altered states of consciousness.
Yes, yes. I was struck in your presentation in the workshop by how skillfully you interwove different threads from different theoretical perspectives in really embodying this spirit of Tai Chi in terms of going with a person's energy rather than doing things that would evoke resistance from them.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind to say that.
Now, what benefits have you experienced in your own life as a result of having practiced these disciplines for 30 years now?
Well, many of the imbalances that were there in my own body, I now have a practice. I also like to think of this and try to tell my patients that these aren't one-time cures. A lot of people can have notions that way and then get disappointed. This is really a method of practice. So for me, I live a fairly stressful life with all of my writing and all of my workshops and traveling and other things like that. And as the stress starts to come up, what I do is I sink my chi and work with my body states and my mental states through these practices, and they've been very beneficial for me that way.
Okay. As I was leafing through your book, I noticed you had something on bullies, and you had a personal story about them, and that's a topic that resonates for me. And listeners, if they go back to one of my early shows, I actually shared a story of being bullied in college, an incident. And as a male of the species who's had to deal with bullying when I was coming up through the ranks, I'm especially interested in your story. There were two bully stories in your book. Maybe you could share one of them.
Well, as a very small man in the culture, it was very easy to be picked on by bullies in my childhood also. And so I would have a fear in my body around that and carried that with me in certain relationships with men. And then as I grew older and started to get into Tai Chi and Qigong, it started to help me to change my life stance. So the postural ways that I embodied, kind of collapsing my shoulders to protect myself and to close off and constrict, I started to notice those things in my body through various of the inner somatic work that I was doing on myself. And then part of Tai Chi practice is what's called push hands or joining hands practice. And so that starts to give you more confidence. And as I...
And I should say that's with two people. You're sort of playing with each other's energies, and you're kind of pushing on each other in a circular manner.
It's a method of learning that the stronger you try to push on somebody, the weaker you really are, because it's really a method of learning how gentleness can overcome strength. Mm-hmm. And I always try to tell my students, be careful of feeling that these powers are more than they are, because it's really a way of learning the way of being a gentle warrior. Mm-hmm. So that if you have to use it, that already means there may be something wrong with your practice. And so I only had two occasions in my whole life of practice where there were times when I needed to use that, and the Tai Chi and Qigong really helped me that way. One time was when I was in Hawaii, and there was a drunk or somebody that was on two or three drugs at the same time, and he took a swing at me, and I was able to move out of the way. And I still felt very afraid at that point, and yet it, I'm sure, saved me a broken nose or something to be able to move out of the way, and he fell into a table.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time was at a local outdoors place where people are parking, and somebody cut in front of me at the parking lot, and I must admit, a not too non-attached way, started honking on my horn, and then I said, uh-oh, I must have made a mistake when I saw this guy get out of the car, because, you know, I'm about 5'8", and this person was like maybe 6'1", 6'2", and really solidly built, and I'm just like a little guy and a scholar. You know, this is after practicing quite some time, and when the person started coming up to me, he came to grab my neck and shake me, because he was so angry that I was honking the horn at him, even though he had stolen my parking space, so to speak. So there's one particular practice that we have in our method of joining hands that has to do with, it's called a splitting movement that comes from the ancient crane set. And so I was able to just split his force as he was coming to grab my neck. And this is an empty force type of method where the person just feels like their energy is sucked out of their body and feels very exposed. And being a gentle spirit myself, I'm not really interested in hurting anybody. I just stopped right at that point, and he saw what I could do. And then he said, I'm sorry, man. I wasn't really meaning to do anything. You just shouldn't be. Well, and then he stopped and said, yeah, I guess I shouldn't have been cutting you off. And he apologized. And that was a very empowering event for me and a part of my own healing in terms of developing more confidence in the way that I was in my body.
That's great. I just love those stories. I guess I'm still working through certain issues myself. Mm-hmm. To sort of leap back, there was a question I meant to ask you earlier.
Let me just add one more point along that.
Sure.
I work with a lot of women that have been sexually abused. And one of my most joyful experiences is that one woman that worked with me for a while who had a history of multiple rapes and was very, very afraid of being around, you know, any kind of exposed situation with a man. Somebody at a laundromat came up and just put his hand on her hand. And she very skillfully, from, you know, one of the Tai Chi movements she had learned in our class, was able to deflect that. And so she said that that was an important part of healing. And some of the new forms of trauma therapy, of healing from trauma and post-traumatic stress, from some of the top people in the field like Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. What he does is he talks about the importance of the somatic, not just an intellectual dimension, in reducing healing, in reducing stress and the sympathetic nervous system overload that comes from people that are suffering from post-traumatic stress. And I was very happy when I heard that he was using my Body Mind Healing Qigong DVD in the training of trauma therapists.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of integrating the psychological and introducing various different kinds of somatic practices, such as Tai Chi, are a very important part of healing people that are suffering in those ways.
Yeah. And one of the topics that listeners know that I'm very interested in is dreaming and dreams. And in your book, you relate an important dream that came to you at the very beginning of this whole journey. You went on a vision quest, and you had an important dream. Can you recap that here for us?
Well, it wasn't actually a dream. It was more actually like a vision, but still to this day, I don't know exactly what it was. But I was out in the woods because I had a fear of sleeping out in the woods at night. And so not just wanting to be psychological about it, I decided to go out into the woods for 40 nights. And one night when I was sleeping there, seven deer came up to me. And I was in a state, I think it would be called lucid dreaming, where I was half awake and half asleep. And the lead deer came up to me, and I said to myself, whoops, I better be careful, or you know, maybe I'm in the deer's territory. And so I said, I'm going to pretend that I'm asleep. And the deer came, and it kissed my eye while it was quivering. And at the next moment, what I noticed is that it was sucked out of my out of its socket. And I said, oh, no. You know, I started going into this place where I said, my parents, when I crawl back to civilization, are going to say, I told you so. Why couldn't you just have stayed in the inside the house like we had always told you? And that was almost worse than the idea that I was going to go around for the rest of my life without an eye. But when I let go to my fate and took a deep breath, and said, well, I love being out in the woods, and if this is the price I have to pay, I guess I'm going to go around with a patch on my eye for the rest of my life. At that moment, when I let go, I noticed that I had missed a healing ritual that was going on, where the deer was washing my eye in its mouth and doing this healing. And then it put the eye back in my socket, and it was no longer an eye, but it was some kind of green stone, like in pieces of emerald or jade or something like that. And when I woke up later, a little bit before sunrise, and the sun was just beginning to get light, as soon as I woke up, I said, wow, what an amazing dream that was. Huh, very interesting. That was one of the most powerful dreams I've ever had.
I guess.
But then I looked around me, and it wasn't a dream at all, because I noticed that there were deer hoofs, deer prints all around me. So what actually happened, I'm not sure, but the way I like to tell the story is that amongst Native Americans, when you have a dream like that, you look at it as a life path.
Yes.
And when I went back to my doctoral group at that time and worked on the dream, I would have, if I was in an ancient culture, I would have taken on the name Deer Kissing Eyes.
Yeah.
And that has taken on my path. That has become my path, which is to try to kiss other people's eyes the way that mine was kissed, and take them to through a transformative journey where that they can see that their ways of being in life have a special gem-like character if they really follow their true paths. And in all of our experiences in life, we have that ability to be healed, to go through a healing journey, to find out our own issues, whether they're from our parents or whatever, to let go of them, and to see the specialness of our own ways of being, and use that for the helping of others.
Well, that's a great place for us to wrap it up. And I have to say, I'm very impressed by your book. It reveals deep commitment and scholarship, and I think you do a good job of bridging East and West for the reader who may be new to this sort of thing. So I will refer people to your book and to your DVD and to your website. And Michael, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks so much, and I hope that some of your listeners will contact me if they have any more questions at drmichael@bodymindhealing.com.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, David.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Michael Mayer. One of the things that particularly interested me is his view that Qigong and Tai Chi are rooted in shamanism. As it happens, I've just returned from a five-day training in the shamanic practice of an approach called soul retrieval. This training was held in Park City, Utah, through the Four Winds Society. The Four Winds Society offers training and even certification in shamanic work, and it's the brainchild of Dr. Alberto Violdo, who was my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 31. If you haven't heard that episode and you would like to learn more about this approach to shamanism, you might want to go back and listen to that episode. I also was a student of Tai Chi for 2 or 3 years, so I have a bit of a feel for both approaches. The idea that these two traditions would have common roots rings true to my experience, both in my own Tai Chi practice and in the day-long experience I had with Michael Mayer. I noted there is considerable emphasis on the use of imagery and imagination. In order to develop qi, the student is asked to engage in exercises involving visualization and imagination. For example, the Tai Chi Qigong student is likely to be asked to imagine their feet growing roots, which reach deep into the ground. Similarly, they may be asked to imagine energy flowing into the crown of their head from above. They may be instructed to imagine they are holding a beach ball in front of themselves and to experience it as a ball of energy. As one becomes more adept in these exercises of visualization and kinesthetic imagination, they will begin to experience and presumably accumulate qi. So the practice is much more than certain postures and movements. The mind and imagination have to be fully engaged as well, if one is to progress. The whole system involves learning to accumulate and direct this qi energy. In Dr. Mayer's book, he also brings in corollary information about the 7 energy centers in the body known as the chakras. Both the chakra system and the physical moves of Qigong and Tai Chi originate in India. Interestingly, my 5-day experience with shamanism also spent considerable time working with the chakras. The tradition I am being trained in is derived primarily from the Incas, but reportedly early societies around the world have recognized these energy centers. And again, the imaginal world plays a major role in the shamanic work. A practice known as shamanic journeying is fundamental to the shaman's work. By entering the imaginal world, the shaman has the experience of leaving his or her body, encountering power animals, guides, and various other entities. Of course, the shaman's physical body doesn't go anywhere. Now, in the rationalist Western tradition, we would be inclined to say that the Tai Chi master and the shaman are just imagining these energies. Just imagining. And when we say just imagining, we mean that they are not real. In the West, imagination is not regarded as real. In these non-Western traditions, however, imagination is seen as real and as a useful tool for shaping and moving energy. Western science, however, continues to produce more and more evidence that the illusion is not what we imagine, but rather what we consider to be hard, fast, and real. The chair I'm sitting on is solid and real. But now we know that at a deeper level, there is nothing solid about it. It is all space, energy, and motion. We're also learning that our thoughts and our emotions are intimately connected to our underlying biochemistry and to our health. What we imagine may help to kill us or to heal us. So I find it very interesting the degree to which Qigong, Tai Chi, and shamanism intersect. As for myself, I'm an adept in neither. The chair still seems solid as a rock to me, and my concentration reels like the proverbial drunken monkey. But I'm working on it.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Thanks to my good friend Jeff Smith for another wonderful musical transition. I told him I'm a fan of the blues, and that's what he came up with. Instead of singing the blues, to paraphrase Woody Guthrie, I'm going down the road feeling fine, fine, fine. I'm going down that road feeling fine. Well, we're still doing our GoDaddy promotion. If you're thinking of buying a domain name, transferring a domain, or getting some web hosting, I have some discounts that can save you some money. Just go to our site at shrinkwrapradio.com, look in the left-hand margin, and you'll find a link to three different promotional codes that will entitle you to some real savings. And while you're looking at that left-hand side of the show's page at shrinkwrapradio.com, you'll also find a link to our Frapper map. And if you haven't done so already, please put yourself on the map, which allows you to put a digital push pin on the location where you live. That way I can tell where my listeners are. And you can get there from our site at shrinkwrapradio.com or by going directly to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. And Frapper is spelled F-R-A-P-P-R. I'm happy to report that we have 8 new pins on the map since the last show. At the same time, this is far short of our total listenership, so where are the rest of you? Take a moment and go to our homepage, find the Frapper link, and let us see where you are. It's such a shot in the arm for me each time I discover a new pin on the map. So here's a big thank you and welcome to our 8 new additions, who are Julie in Alexandria, Virginia, Sarah in Decatur, Georgia, Paul in London, England, Sarah in Oakville, Missouri, John in New Orleans, Derek in Nebraska, Ken in Glendora, California, and John in San Diego. Now, once again, let me remind you of my upcoming workshop in Tuscany, Italy. Beautiful Tuscany. This will be a week-long personal growth workshop that I'll be co-leading with Dr. Ron Alexander. It will be in a beautiful Tuscan retreat center. For those of you who are already in Europe, it's an easy trip for you, and September is a great time of year to be there. The dates are September 18 through the 24th, and we have room for a total of about 8 to 15 people, and there's still space available. You can find a link to the retreat center on my About Dr. Dave page at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, if you're interested, drop me an email right away, and I'll send you some more information. This is your chance to get an intensive experience of me, Dr. Dave, and Dr. Ron Alexander, who was my guest on show number 29, and who I hope to have back between now and our workshop. As I've said before, if you enjoy Shrink Wrap Radio, then this is an experience you really owe yourself.
Hi. This is Christopher Van Nuys, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thanks, good son, Christopher. Last time, I lamented about not getting any email. Well, a number of you came to the rescue. There's probably not enough time to read them all, so I'll try to be a bit selective. First of all, I heard from Paul Moore, who took my Hero's Journey workshop in Ireland. And Paul writes, "Well and truly back in the belly of the whale, up to my eyes in work, which is a good complaint, moving office and diversifying somewhat as well. A lot of changes afoot, some good things in the pipeline construction-wise. If it all comes off, I'll be very happy. I would love to go on to Tuscany. I have to try and free myself up for it. I have to say it is looking unlikely at the moment, but you never know. Things might look better closer to the time." Well, Paul, I do hope that you will keep that in mind and spring yourself free if at all possible. He also went on to ask, what is Qigong? So, Paul, I hope you listened to this show and you got that answer to your question. The next one comes from Dr. Susan. And she writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm really enjoying Shrink Wrap Radio. Just gave a CD to my shrink. I'm particularly interested in archetypes, mythology, etc., and I've been studying Carolyn Mace for a while. Your variety of topics is amazing, showing your networker archetypes effects. Here are a few topics I'd enjoy hearing about. 1. The psychology of disability, feeling different, managing energy, living with frustration. I have progressive vision loss, learning to live in a different way. One of the hardest parts is making others feel comfortable with my disability, mostly because they have never thought about what it might be like and naturally fear it for themselves. My role models have been Julia, a podcaster therapist at eyes2eyes.com, and Dr. Susan Krieger, a Stanford professor interviewed on Tech Nation and KQED. Gee, maybe I can track her down as well and interview her, because that's a great suggestion, Susan. Two, everyday life of a shrink. What do you think what do they think about their clients? How do they get through a day listening to this stuff? How do they work their miracles? Okay, those are all great issues. Three, sex and gender. Okay, you want to keep your show clean and not too contentious, but this is a big area of life that deserves more attention. What are the latest theories of sexuality? Do archetypes influence sexual feelings? By the way, I like Susan Stewart on aging and Crohn's. At the age of 63, I'm one. A fascinating topic is Clifford Nass, Wired for Speech, which discusses the ingrained nature of gender and personality interpretations of synthetic voices, which you hear more and more and are the daily source of info for us visually impaired. How does this affect the chances of Commander-in-Chief or Hillary Clinton? Are we so wired for speech we cannot accept a woman's voice as president? Okay, that's another good set of issues, Susan. Four, psychology and artificial intelligence and related computing topics. Examples, how do people learn? With more powerful robots in the future, how will our lives change psychologically and spiritually? AI started out about learning from psychology, but has psychology learned from AI? Now, that's one that I have really wanted to get into. And Dr. Susan, I see that you are in computer science, maybe you've got a name or two that you would suggest I pursue to discuss AI, artificial intelligence. Five, living with your mistakes. Computers are great for amplifying our mistakes. For example, sending a message to a whole list instead of an individual, clicking the wrong button and not being able to recover, choosing the wrong mic for a podcast. Yes, I've suffered from all of these, I must say. I like Tetlock's podcast on fallibility of experts. There have been studies by engineers, Petrosky, on the peculiarities of everyday things as well as the big accidents that alter the course of engineering. A convergence of engineers and psychology, for example, Petrosky, I think he's still alive, would be fascinating. Or a famous woman computer scientist, Nancy Levison, who studies software safety, airplanes, heart pacemakers, etc. On a smaller scale of events, from a vision-impaired perspective, everyday mistakes begin to dominate social life, for example, navigating through a buffet lunch or reading name tags at a meeting. Is there a general theory of this stuff? Well, Susan, I don't know, but I'll try to keep my ear to the ground on all of these issues. Susan closes saying, thanks for the hard work that goes into your podcasts. You've got an audience. And she signs it, Dr. Susan, PhD, Computer Science, Prescott, Arizona. So, Dr. Susan, thank you so much for those excellent suggestions. And once again, you confirm that I have a very brilliant audience and one that seems to have a lot of people who are in one or another area of technology. I find that very fascinating. Next, we hear from Ken Valerio, who is an artist who has written before, and I give his full name because I know he'd love to have you go take a look at his art on his website, which is www.kenvalerio.com. That's spelled K-E-N-V-A-L-L-A-R-I-O. And he writes, hey, Dr. Dave, I wanted to write as I heard you hadn't received any emails in a while. I'm assuming that many of your listeners are like myself, afraid to be too involved. Many in the podcasting world can be impatient with their listeners, and your sense of community is a rarity. But I wanted to assure you that many of us are listening very loyally. I wanted to say stylistically, it has been fun watching your show really find its groove simply as a format. It is developing a wonderful confidence with how you use the music and timing and the sectional quality of it. Without substance, this style wouldn't mean anything, but with your talent as a host, it's exciting to watch. Hey, Ken, thanks for those observations, because I'm glad to hear that you've been paying attention to these little stylistic changes that I've been introducing as the show has been evolving. I haven't gotten much feedback on them, so it's nice to get those words of support. Back to Ken's letter, he writes, "The show, An Artist's Journey of Transformation, was my favorite so far. My bias as an artist certainly plays into this, but I found his story very inspiring. I too had a moment of deep insight in my life whereby I stopped working and I went on unemployment. I loved it, every minute of it. I had a spiritual teacher at the time, and once when I was complaining, I said, 'I just don't want to work anymore.' And he said, 'Then don't.' It hit me in a deep way. I stopped working and I began to wonder what my life would be like if I only did what I wanted to. I found, paradoxically, that I was much more productive. Eventually, the checks ran out, much to my disappointment, but when I needed to work, I decided to only accept work that appealed to me, and 5 years later, I have yet had a job I didn't want to do." I think there's an error in there. I have yet to have a job I didn't want to do. "For the last 2 years, I've supported myself with my art. This relationship with work is one I wish I could share with others, but I suppose we all have insights that work only for us, and I ought to be grateful for that. Anyway, I found that show to be deep and poetic. He was definitely my kind of person. I hope this feedback helps. I've enjoyed every episode. All my best, Dr. Dave. Good luck with your current projects." Hey, Ken, thanks once again for your stalwart support. I really appreciate it. Next, I hear from Mark in Rockwall, Texas, who writes, "Awesome show. I wish this podcast existed several years ago when I started my double major in computer science and psychology. I graduated on the 1st of July. I'm glad it's over, but I still have a voracious appetite for high-quality psychological content such as your podcast. I'm a telecommunications engineer by trade. I get funny looks and cocked heads when people see I also have a degree in psychology. I simply explain to them the human brain and computer processors are one in the same. Only one is a bit wetter. I have to admit, my original reason for studying psychology was to learn more about parapsychology and the associated fringe subjects. Unfortunately, my school completely refused to associate themselves with non-mainstream science. Very annoying and disappointing. Now I use my knowledge as a mask to filter out the mainstream clutter to seek out the fringe psychological subjects. My father taught martial arts for many years and speaks of several, quotes, mystical events in his life. He's a simple Kansas farmer boy with the honesty of Gandhi. He has no reason to lie and is still in awe of some of his experiences. My parents' martial arts background and yoga training have certainly fueled my parapsychology interests. There's something, quotes, else, end quotes, out there we have yet to discover. I just wish someone with a bit of money could fan the flames of parapsychological research. Your podcast is fascinating. I greatly enjoy your interviews, especially with parapsychologists. Please keep up the good work. Thank you, Mark, Rockwall, Texas." Mark, thanks for that note. Loved it. And then we hear from Jonathan, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I thought I would send you a quick email just to say I really enjoyed listening to your iPod broadcasts. I am in the process of doing a summer course in basic psychology. However, the instructor is a hardcore behaviorist and loves his Skinner and his rats." I know the type. "I'm finding the course hard going. However, listening to your iPod broadcasts have kept me going. I'm thinking of doing an MA in family therapy in the new year. I'm from England. However, I've just moved to the USA with my American wife. We've been living in Carson City, Nevada for about 6 months. It's quite close to Lake Tahoe. I enjoy the skiing. I really like the professional way you do your broadcasts and the really interesting guests you have on the show. Some of them are mad as March hares, however. I try to have an open..." Actually, I think he says, "However, I try to have an open mind like yourself." Jonathan, I'd be curious which ones you thought were mad as March hares. Getting back to the letter, I personally like the ideas of Carl Jung. However, my instructor looks horrified when I dare to mention Jung's name. I was personally influenced by the writings of Anthony Storr, who wrote one of the most popular books on Jung's ideas and life in Britain, Jung, a Fontana Modern Master. However, it was after reading a book by Anthony Stevens, Archetype Revisited, An Updated Natural History of the Self, that I personally realized the power of Jung's ideas. Yeah, Steven Pinker, in his last book, The Blank Slate, has some ideas about human development, which I personally feel are very linked to what Jung had to say about the human condition. I have recently been interested in the ideas of Michael White. Here's a website that gives you an outline of his ideas, and he gives me that link, which briefly is www.abacon.com, /FamTherapy/White.html. I'm sure interested listeners can find Michael White and Family Therapy by doing a Google search. Michael White is one of the founders of narrative therapy, I believe. Back to the letter. Also, when I lived in the UK, I was highly influenced by the ideas of the KCC. And I don't know the KCC. It says around systemics ideas. Professor John Schotter is one of the best people to discuss systemic ideas with, a really nice man and a good talker. He's a really nice man and a good talker. So maybe you'd be interested as having him as a guest on your show. And he gives me a link where I might be able to contact him. I'm sure if you ask him, he will agree to go on the show. I do apologize about some of the grammar of this email. However, I personally suffer from dyslexia, so sometimes the spelling and grammar can be a bit strange. However, keep up with the programs. They are really great. Take care. Jonathan. Well, Jonathan, I don't suffer from dyslexia, but I notice that my tongue seems to trip over itself a lot of the time in these podcasts, and I hope that everybody will be very understanding and forgiving about that. And I think that will wrap up the emails for today. I'm in email heaven again. As I've said so many times before, your listener email and feedback are the fuel this show runs on. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And my username on Skype is ShrinkPod. And I've got a page on MySpace, and the name there is also ShrinkPod. Okay, before I complained about not enough email, now I'm going to complain about not enough voicemail. Nobody has used the MyChingo recording facility on our site yet. My friend Jerry Trumbull helped me test it out, and the sound quality is great. All you need is a microphone hooked up to your computer. There's no cost to you or to me, and again, sharing your voice is a great way to build this community. You'll see a bright green MyChingo logo on the left side of each of the Shrink Wrap Radio pages. So just go to shrinkwrapradio.com and look for MyChingo there on the left. And just click on that logo and the rest will become self-evident. It's very simple to use. You can record a comment or a question, or you can record one of those little transitions that I've been using along the lines of, hi, this is Juan from Quito, Ecuador, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave. So I'm looking for somebody to break the ice on this. By the way, 5 days from now, I take off for a second week of shamanic training with the Four Winds Society in Park City, Utah. Again, if you listen to show number 31 on shamanic psychology with Dr. Alberto Violdo, you'll have some idea of what I'm up to. So once again, my next show may be a little late due to this trip, but do stay subscribed. I think you will especially like the next show, which will be on Freud in honor of the global celebration of the 150th anniversary of his birth. Happy birthday, Dr. Freud! My guest for the Freud show will be Dr. Doug Davis, who I interviewed on Shrink Wrap Radio number 15. He's a great guest, and that was one of our most popular shows, so you don't want to miss it. Please help me spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you have a podcast or a blog or a MySpace or a LinkedIn page, we'd certainly appreciate a plug there. You may have noticed our new promo in the feed. If you have any place where you can distribute or play that, please do so. Finally, we have 8 plugs on the iTunes site. That is 8 reviews. If you can figure out how to get some of the great things you have been saying in your emails onto the iTunes recommendation page, that would be terrific. Just go to the iTunes Music Store, click on Podcasts, and then type in Shrink Wrap Radio as 3 separate words. And that'll bring you to our page on iTunes. And then you should see, if you click the little drop down so it displays all of the shows, you'll see the place where you can enter your review of the show. I want to close by once again thanking Dr. Michael Mayer for sharing his 30 years of experience in Qigong and Tai Chi. In keeping with that theme of energy medicine, it's appropriate that we close with some very high-energy, pod-safe music. This piece has particular appeal to me since I've been working on learning to play the didgeridoo. The piece is called Color Fields Energy Root by the South African group Fresh Music, and fresh it is. You can purchase the song on the PodSafe Music Network by going to the link on our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.